Technology is at our fingertips. We can do so much with that smartphone. You're listening to this MTM podcast, which is a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager, and thanks for allowing me to do that subtle reminder of what we're doing. Today, we're going to talk about an ag tech startup platform that's allowing local growers to connect with wholesale buyers, chefs, supermarkets. One big supermarket in particular in the St. Louis area called Schnucks is now buying local for their produce. And we're going to talk with the CEO of Foodshed.io. His name is Dan Beckman. And forgive us, we're going to talk a little baseball right at first. I force a habit. It's kind of hard for me to break from that. But we're going to find out about how the supply lines and how COVID and consistency and getting things to the shelves and how that all plays in. And it's a little bit of a challenge, but how these producers are getting over that hurdle and getting food into your grocery store. So this is a startup that partnered with that big grocery store chain. It is locally grown. It's within a small radius of the city, but a lot can be grown there. So that is today's episode of the M2M podcast. If you have any feedback for me, hit me up, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Would love to hear from you about a tip or an idea for a future episode of the M2M podcast. Here is Dan Beckman with today's installment. All right, Dan, as a National League baseball fan, I always pull for the National League in the World Series. But being that the Dodgers and how the Cardinals can beat the Dodgers, as a guy who spent time in St. Louis, it's kind of probably a mixed emotion back in the Lou.
You know, I feel like, I don't know if you remember the part of the season when we thought that they wouldn't actually finish because they had COVID. I think the fact that the season actually is over right now is a relief, because there were so many people that didn't think this season was going to happen. And then there are people that thought they wouldn't be able to finish it. And I feel like everybody should be happy that everybody got through it. And if the Dodgers want to get a title out of that, I mean, wasn't a full season, but you know, that's fine. I mean,
that's the way it goes sometimes.
Let's see what happens next year. Yeah.
You're sitting though this morning, the company, a lot of the time in Missouri, Illinois, St. Louis, in that area, and we're going to get into that in a moment, but you're kind of in the tech area of, and also a very heavy ag state, San Francisco, San Jose, the Napa Valley. We just had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with wildfires. I mean, you are on the front lines of so many things, either in one office or the other office. I mean, what's it like today as we record this on a Wednesday morning? There another round of fires overnight. I'm sure if you look out that window behind you, what do you see?
There is a little bit of a smoke cloud here, but it's not as bad as it was. And, you know, there's Farmer's Almanac kind of stuff. Rain should be starting soon. November normally brings rain here. Sometimes we get rain in September, and in fact, we have. So, you know, that's really the important thing to think about at this point. I'm, for one, not to get into some controversies here, but I think that they do need to maintain the forest better. That will help. I know that there's a lot of people pointing at climate change. It is drier. There's that sort of thing happening here. But they used to have, back in the 50s and 60s, they used to have teams of people that, you know, they were normally teenagers, maybe early 20-somethings, that used to clear out the brush, and then they would have fire breaks every so often. And we haven't been doing that as a country really effectively. And it's not just clearing off the brush from that falls to the bottom of the forest. It's more than that. And that would be what I would advocate for. And it sounds like we're getting some more funding. So I think there's reasons to be more optimistic for next year. But, you know, it's just been such a crazy year. I think everybody is just hoping that 2021 is just a different beast entirely.
So are you a California native then?
I grew up in Ohio, so I'm a Midwesterner, and I still feel like that sort of culture is my home. So I understand Iowa, I like to think. I've spent some time there for sure. get confused with, you know, Ohio and Iowa a lot for people who aren't from there, but I know the difference.
That's right. And there's a couple of videos out there about the whole Ohio, Iowa thing, and especially out in the West Coast, say you're in Los Angeles or San Francisco, like you are. It's like, you're from where? Which one? Okay, that's the potato one. No, that's, and the jokes go on and on. So as a Midwest guy, was food something you were interested in growing up, and this is your way to be involved in agriculture, or is this more of a tech thing for you?
Believe it or not, it's neither. And, when I grew up in Ohio, we didn't have good produce. I don't know if you could say that they have more produce now than when I grew up, they have more varieties, but, fun fruits and fruit roll-ups, that was considered to be a fruit or a vegetable. And I'm not one of these people that's like a foodie. And, God bless all the foodies out there. I'm not saying anything bad about it, but I come from a perspective of the drive-through. And I think that most people in the Midwest still are this way on some level. But I have spent the last 13 years mostly in California, and people actually treat, persimmons, we have those this time of year, as candy that they give to their kids on Halloween. And I was like, what is up with this? And the truth is, they have access to better produce. And so I like the challenge here of, on the one hand, bringing a better product to market, because I think Midwesterners actually do like good food. They haven't always had access to the ingredients. The ingredients do grow in that area most of the year, and they can have them, and it works when we do it. And then the other thing is, I like the idea of bringing these communities closer to market. So it's more like the technology does enable this, but it's more like the substance of it that's really interesting to me. And, keeping millions of dollars in what we call the food shed around the St. Louis area. Schnucks is our partner, our main partner. They did have a store in Iowa, but they recently closed it, unfortunately. But until then, some of our products were in that store before it closed. But, their stores operate in Indiana, Illinois, Missouri. They have one in Wisconsin. And so that area, keeping some of the money back there, trying to increase that amount, increasing the opportunities for farmers to do what we call specialty crops, but what most normal people call fruit and vegetables, things that people eat, is good. It's good for the land, and then it's good for the economy. So that's what's really interesting to me.
You didn't probably have to go very far when you were in Ohio as a kid to look around cornfield, soybean field, cornfield. And as you mentioned, the specialty crops, we're very good in the I states of growing those two. Fruits and vegetables is more of a challenge. It is a specialty. It's labor intensive for us. We don't have the infrastructure to sell. We also don't have the climate that, say, you have in, if we go over towards Fresno or the breadbasket there, the salad bowl of the United States there in California. How is the climate, knowing that it's inconsistent at certain times of year, that you can answer the question when, say, Schnuck says, well, what are you going to do for me in December, January, February? I know stuff's not growing.
We're not ever going to do citrus fruit and avocados. There are certain things we can't do. In terms of that, there's always something. We're delivering right now, for instance, but there are root vegetables that are going on, in December and January, and there's always something if we have to officially be doing it outside. But putting that aside, we all know that there are indoor greenhouses that are popping up like crazy. And so what really keeps us doing this all year round are, the hydroponic and aquaponic farms that are in the area. And you can also, this is actually not as fancy as that, I guess. People are building greenhouses because the demand is there, and they're doing things like hothouse tomatoes. You have to build the demand in the market, and then farmers figure out a way to meet it. And, the other thing, Iowa is one case, but in St. Louis in particular, and I think that we can do this model in a lot of places in the country, but St. Louis does have four seasons, and that's where their distribution center is, and that's where most of this is headquartered. But if you think about it from there, 3 hours south of there, you're already into Tennessee, you know, and into Kentucky and places like that. That is considered local on a mileage level, depending upon who you talk to. But the USDA would consider that local. It doesn't necessarily make sense in somebody's mind that Kentucky is 2 hours from St. Louis for some reason, but it is. And so they have a lot of diversity of land around that area. If you go north, it's more like what most of Iowa is. If you go south, it's more like you're beginning to get into cotton fields in Missouri. They have them in the boot heel of Missouri. It's really, you know, it feels like you're in the South. Even the accents sound like you're in the South.
If you go to any of our farmers markets here in, say, March, April, May, it is not uncommon for us in Iowa and central Iowa to see Missouri-grown produce. And you're not even talking Missouri. You're talking just south of there. So Missouri does have its own variety of some products that allow. But yeah, I mean, Memphis, let's go back. We'll use our baseball analogy. I mean, Memphis is close enough to St. Louis that that's where the Cardinals put their AAA team. So they think it's close enough, just like Chicago to Des Moines is close enough for some of those things. So how is geography play? Is it become a marketing question, logistics question, when you get answered by these places you're trying to get into for distribution for specialty crops?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why local is a big deal, and we keep talking about it. There are some people who care, but I don't think most people care about it yet until they try it and they realize that there's a difference. If we're able to grow our produce closer to where it's consumed, it can be fresher. And most of the produce that you're getting in Iowa, if not all of it right now, comes from far away. If it comes from California, or you may even noticed Chilean apples and New Zealand apples, that's pretty crazy. We get them here. Maybe that's a West Coast thing, but they have to basically, apples are a little bit different, but for most things, they pick them when they're not quite ripe yet so that they ripen on the way and that they can make the trip. And nutritionists that we discuss this with on a regular basis say there's not as many nutrients in that because it wasn't given as much time to ripen on the vine or on the tree or whatever. So there's that case to be made. In other countries where they have more of a local food system, they say that they end up eating less, they end up wasting less because what they have there actually has more nutritional value. So, you know, that's one case that can be made for this. The other case, we never planned for a pandemic, but our supply chain was a lot more stable than things that came from far away because it actually is more complicated to get things from far away in terms of how many different places it switched over and what has to happen and work in order for it to get there. And so I know that the pandemic doesn't seem like it's going to be here forever. We hope that it's not. We thought that climate change would be more something that we would have to worry about. Last year, people probably remember the floods. we were concerned with that, and we have a diversity of farms where that wasn't an issue last year, and this year we didn't have the floods at that level, thankfully. But if you think about it, even from a national security perspective, does it make sense that we grow most of our lettuce in like one small area in Arizona and in California? And then when you have a recall, the whole country notices it. This is a more resilient food system, and that's good for the consumer as well as the farmers, because we want to have more opportunities to sell to people where you don't have to worry about tariffs going up and down and international things happening. I know that there's a lot of Missouri jokes that happen between Iowa and Missouri. We don't have to get into those, but there aren't going to be tariffs anytime soon, I hope. There aren't from Missouri to Illinois. So this is a market that we think can be more stable when we, right now it is, And that when we build it out, we hope that it's more profitable. In some cases it has been, it still is something where it's a market, but you know, what we try to do that I think it hasn't been happening in local is we try to plan the season ahead of time as much as possible. So farmers can know what to plant and they're not just guessing and hoping that it's going to get bought, which is when you get into some trouble.
You got to know where your market is, what your destination is for that product. So give me, I guess, a sense of how many different farmers you have in your network.
It keeps going up all the time because we decided to do it differently than most tech companies. Most tech companies are all about signing up as many people or farms or whatever as possible. And they may not take care of them very well. We thought of it more as there aren't endless numbers of farms here. Let's make sure that everybody that we work with actually gets some business out of it. So we started with 24 at the beginning of the season. I think that we might be closer to 50 now. So it might have doubled. Just people have accumulated over time, you know, different amounts from these farms. A handful of farms probably did most of it. And strangely enough, some of the farms that we thought would be the top performers at the beginning of the year didn't end up being that way. And, you know, we have to figure that out in the off season, as they say, and understand. But there were some reals, there were a few surprise farms that came in and did really good work and had a lot to offer. And so, you know, we're still trying to figure that out. But fortunately, we had more than enough for this season. And there was even more to buy that was available at the start of the season. So it was good. And, you know, the other thing that happened in our space was it was stable. So we bought what they had. In a lot of instances, there was a lot of demand all of a sudden. So, you know, that was okay too. We don't yet do things like dairy and meat. We tried to get into that because that was where we thought we saw a lot of disruption was taking place with the restaurants and the distributors, especially in the spring. And we couldn't get it to work fast enough, unfortunately. But because we started talking to them, we're probably going to try to do some of that next year. We may even try and get some of that in this year still. But that was where, when you read about some of the real concerns that people were having in the spring, that's what we noticed.
Well, and dairy and meat are such sensitive items that they just can't sit on a shelf. I mean, it becomes a food bank problem, a food, you know, food pantry issue where, yeah, they get a donation, but that gallon of milk's got to be pretty much out the door and in someone's stomach within 2 weeks at most before that thing becomes no longer good. Okay, when you say 25 to 50 on your farmers, when you double, is it word of mouth that people find out about you, or are you openly soliciting and trying to just diversify your a base of supply?
Well, one example is that we didn't know whether or not we were going to be doing apples this year. I'm not exactly sure whether we ended up doing a lot of them. If we did any, it was a small amount, just because our grocer had prior commitments, and we've all heard that one. So when they have prior commitments, to either wait till they change, or those are commitments and that's the end of the story. But we thought that there may be some opportunity there. So then we had to go out and research farms, see who was growing this. In some cases, there was definitely word of mouth where people heard that it was going well and they knew that we had demand. So they told other people and then that worked really well. In some cases, the grocer actually said, we haven't worked with these people in years or we're aware of them. We'd like you to talk to them, or they came to us and they wanted to know what was going on here. So that was good. So it's a mixture of a lot of things. We definitely call places, but you know, we aren't just kind of getting places to sign up in our app and forgetting about them. We really, when there wasn't COVID, we had a rule that we needed to meet everybody, no matter where they were. And that was my favorite part of this whole thing, was farm visits. And I learned from every farm that I went to. And it's a lot. This business is different than I think other ones. And I mean, I hope that your audience, or maybe you, can appreciate this. there's a certain amount of trust and understanding, because crazy things happen, like weather. And I haven't met too many farmers that I don't trust, but if I see what their situation is like there and they describe what's happening, it makes it easier for me to be able to explain why there may have been a problem, and that it's that they're doing a good job and that we can trust them. And then I think that they need to be able to trust us, because oftentimes they're planning stuff. They may be doing it based on our word or our handshake or that sort of thing. And so we honor those things. And so it's harder to do on a phone call. It's not impossible. We had to do that this year. The grocer wanted to bring everybody together every February and do kind of awards and things. We had to figure that out, because we're not going to bring everybody together and cause a super spreader event this year. But we're going to be doing that sort of thing. And this is a community. I think it started that way before we got here, and we're joining it. It's not a run and gun, try and get as many people involved as possible. And I think that when we expand into other states and markets and work with other grocers, that we're talking about developing that right now, I still think that this model works. In California, people don't understand it. They might in the Central Valley, but you know, in the tech scene in Silicon Valley, they don't understand how this works. They could listen to this podcast and they could get our trade secrets, but they still may not totally get how the culture works, which is, they're not sitting around waiting for like some tech guru to come there and save the day. They can't move their farm. You know, they own that space, they live there, and they need something that they can trust and that's consistent. And, you know, even in some cases where, you know, Stanford students, wonder what your audience thinks about this. I went to Stanford Business School, which is the best business school for startups in the country by reputation. I don't think that they got a good idea on this space, because they were like, how is this defensible? Couldn't somebody come along and just offer your farms a lot more money for this and blow you out of the water? And I was like, well, you know, first of all, we've been working with these places year after year. We've done what we said we were going to do. And Schnucks is probably in that region the largest buyer of produce. And so it's good for them both to have a good, positive working relationship with one another. And correct me if I'm wrong, some of your farmers may disagree with this, but if you get a really good price, like a really high price for a couple of weeks, and it jeopardizes something where you've been working with them for years and it's dialed in, and they give you a higher price even when there's a lower one in the market, you go with the price that is stable, because that solves your biggest problem, which is instability. And we are stable. That's our thing. And so they didn't understand that. And I understand why they didn't understand that, because, you know, they invest in things like Uber that's about making money really, really fast and then selling it. And then it doesn't make any money the whole time. And then it's a problem. Our thing is, you know, it's not killing it on the profits, but it is covering its own right now as a startup. And just like farms have to do as much as possible. And we are trying to make everything as stable as possible. And I think that's a Midwestern thing. I do think it's appealing to other regions. I think it's a farmer thing. I think
the Ohio and the Midwest, the Ohio and the Missouri and the Iowa thing is sometimes hard to explain to those in California. I mean, just by reputation, just because it is so different. And the way, I'm not saying that they don't shake hands in California. Nobody shakes hands anywhere right now. But I mean, deals are, it's still about what's in the language of that contract. And you've got to go into Schnucks when you go into St. Louis and say, here's what my issue is. They've got to say yes or no, but know that that truck is coming in on Tuesday morning at 6:30 and it's going to supply 13 stores or 30 stores or however many that you're contracted for. And that stability is extremely important I would imagine, in the grocery business. And I guess that goes back to one of the discussions we had earlier here, Dan, was about that stability of seasonality with food. Schnucks just has to know that, yeah, I'm going to get apples year-round because apples are cold and we can keep them in cold storage, or potatoes are this way, or other mm-hmm. products. But avocados aren't, and onions aren't, and for sure peaches. I mean, certain things mm-hmm. just don't have a seasonality to them to say the word fresh. So where's the line of fresh versus stable versus I'm in the store with that product that was grown hydroponically or in my greenhouse in say downstate Illinois or Missouri or Kentucky?
Well, for all your food scientists out there and people that are working on different kinds of seeds and things that are going on out there that maintain the present modern day food system, they do not need to be worried about their job security. We are not replacing what we call conventional produce, even though organic is somewhat conventional in our eyes, the way that a lot of it's grown. The stuff that comes from far away has a role, and it is a modern work of science. But seasonality is good for business. So, this is something that people, this is how we actually got the business. I don't know if this will work at other chains, but there's a peach farm called Eckert's Peaches that St. Louisans grew up with, and they know it. And Schnucks has the exclusive agreement with them. And so this is when they started to understand what we were doing. When those peaches come in, people come in for those peaches year after year. It's like a buzzer that goes off in their mind. And it's time, they're here. And it increases sales throughout the store. And so there are other kinds of farms that are not known yet that do good work like Eckert's does. And it is good to have this seasonality because it makes it gives you a reason to go into a grocery store. It makes it so that they have a competitive advantage in the market, because if they always have an Eckert's peach kind of thing, you know, for those of you who drive through like me, it's like when they have the McRib at McDonald's and they probably drop that every time they just need a sales boost. So it's exciting, and then it's out of season, and then you got to go back to wherever the peaches come from normally. And so that's going to keep happening. I do think that this is a good market for local. In some cases, we're hoping it's a growing market. So that's always exciting. But I don't think that it's going to adversely, especially not quickly, affect the major markets and the major players, you know. And, you know, we'll see. They're not threatened by us yet at all. I don't think that they even care, but it could be an issue later. But right now it isn't. In terms of hydroponic, we need technology to kind of ramp up in order to really realize what that's supposed to be, because essentially we can grow what we need in 30 to 45 days, depending upon what it is. And it's grown in a way where you don't have to worry about pests as much. There are things that happen in a system like that. So it's not like farming. There are things that happen even in these, you know, multi-million-dollar facilities that are out there. They've had outages. So it does happen. But overall, it's a cleaner way of growing. It's a regenerative way, to throw out that term. You can recycle most of everything, and it's preserving the topsoil, which is something that I think that we care about, especially in the Midwest. And not just us, major players like General Mills are starting to set goals on that. So, you know, that's the kind of world that we want to live in. And in order for those farms to work in the optimal way, we need data from the consumer. We need to know what's being bought and sold, and they shouldn't be guessing either. And then the value of what they're doing, we hope, is going to go up. I mean, here's another trade secret. So there's a lot of value lost when the food is thrown out. And I know that some farmers may think, well, we don't want them to buy less from us. That wouldn't be good. I hear that. But at the same time, with our system, when we've been able to prove, this has happened in a small way, so we still have to prove this, but I think that this is where it's going. if your tomatoes sell out and they're part of a system that makes that work, then we're all paying for those tomatoes to be that are thrown away that aren't selling out. And if we tweak our system in a way where it works a lot better, those tomatoes will be, they will pay more for those tomatoes, because a third roughly of what we're paying in produce is being thrown away. And I say we're paying it, but the grocery is paying it. So if you can if you can cut that in half, the farmer can get a raise. And that's not a given, because that's why our system is integrated with the farms. We want it to be integrated with them so that it's related. If there's just something that comes along that is just trying to get efficiencies, then it could be the other way where they're just buying less. We don't want that. We want to connect the farmers' work that they're doing to it. And we think that that will actually improve the value overall. And I have one last example of this, and I know I'm long with answering these questions. When Walmart started to integrate with Procter & Gamble, that's how one way that they got the lower prices. And Procter & Gamble is still open. I mean, they're doing pretty well over there. They became partners. And right now, in most cases, a retailer that buys produce and a farmer that grows it, they don't have much sharing of information at all. Some cases they do, but not very often. Those two groups should be partners. They need to work together on this. They have the same kind of problem. They both need to sell produce. And so the more that we can reduce the friction between those two parties that are really on the same side in a lot of ways, you know, and that means that sometimes we have to say to the grocer, look, these people need to make more money. You know, this is important. We need to take care of these farms in your area. Fortunately, the grocer that we're working with thinks that way. And I think a lot of them do. But if they don't have the channels of communication open, they're not planning ahead of the season, they're not working with them year after year, you can't end up realizing a situation that works for everybody, which is farmers are paid more and treated decently, which is important because we all know this. I know that everybody talks about this. You're growing food for everybody. You should be respected. It's the hard part of this. But then we also have to make sure the consumers are happy and that they have something they can afford. And so where do we look in between? The grocer needs to keep paying their people and doing their thing. Throwing away the produce seems to be a waste. So that's one area we're trying to reduce cost. We're trying to reduce costs on everything else, like boxes, which are the dumbest costs that we have. And then transportation costs. Can we share together on trucks or use backhauls from the grocers so we don't have to pay for that stupid cost? So that's a lot of what we're doing here, and we're really trying to work hard on. And, you know, there undoubtedly will be AI solutions, artificial intelligence solutions that alone will try to do this. I'm advocating for the farmers and the people being included in this, because I think that that's a system that's sustainable, that treats farmers with respect, delivers a better product. We should start seeing this whole thing as, I don't just grow this one kind of tomato. I understand what different communities want. And over time, I'm growing a special kind of tomato that only I can sell and everybody wants it. That's where the kind of world that we're going to.
Well, and just think, if you have that special tomato that you say, I have this thing, this is incredible salsa. Oh, it's homemade. Why? Well, my tomatoes are incredible because they're this kind. And, you know, there is a lot of food bragging. I mean, let's face it. There's a reason that on social media is that food is such a huge thing when people can and talk about where that is sourced or what it is that's something that's only unique to my area. I mean, let's go back to what's east of you in Napa Valley. It's a certain type of grape, just like the French say. It's a certain type of grape that makes our Bordeaux so fantastic, and we can only call it that. So there is value to that, and that is something. All right, Dan, I got to, before we go here, two things. Does your business boom if there isn't a pandemic because of the people are interested in the sense of they know, they want to know where their food is sourced. And I'll give you the background on that. In Florida, talking to the Secretary of Agriculture there this spring, think of all the food that's grown in South or in Florida. People in that area and major metropolitans had no idea where their food came from, was just 30 to 300 miles from their back door. So did that help your business in the sense of really championing the whole locally sourced, locally grown into my grocery store?
Well, you know, our customers are the consumers at the end of the day, but we work with major retailers. And so in some ways, I think it helped, but it wasn't a boom for us. And I mean, the pandemic, I think, was hard for a lot of people. So it wasn't hard for us. It was in some ways a benefit because, like you're saying, some people realized what was going on here. But our sales cycle and meeting with these grocers and gaining the trust and getting these deals in place, I couldn't meet with them in person. And so I think it's taking a lot longer for us to get more customers. I think it probably helped our Schnucks, or we had that deal already, because thankfully they had something like this in place, and they, you know, I think they sold a lot of produce. I think a lot of grocers also sold a lot of produce this year. So I think that we're more of a marathon, not just a single race. If COVID was here to stay, and we all hope it is not here to stay, and I mean, I just don't think it's going to be, that would help, I think. I know that sounds strange. And everybody would be like, we're changing everything for this.
But, yeah, and it's a marketing sense of understanding, and it's just a greater education. I mean, that's part of this podcast. That's part of the Market to Market TV show, is always educating people about what are the factors in how, we always like to say, how it gets from gate to plate. In the next 6 to 18 months, what does Food Shed look like?
Well, we do have, we're going to be growing with our existing customer, which is Schnucks. They agreed to do this again for another year. We're working on that right now, but we're already talking about the season next year. And we started talking about it in September. So this year's season, in some cases, we're still talking about it. So that's a head start. We're very excited about that. And we will have some other customers that are coming online. I can't announce any of them right now. We're still going back and forth and that sort of thing. And when we're allowed to, I definitely hope that you'll hear about it. So we're going to be growing, but we are not trying to just grow as fast as possible. We're trying to do it in a stable and a strong way. We do hope to be national within 5 years, though. So we're not going to be slow about this. Our goal is to make it possible for everybody to have access to local produce. So we have to go across the country and make this concept real. And so that's our ambition.
All right. Dan Beckman, I appreciate the time. Thank you so very much for the discussion.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It's been good.
Foodshed.io CEO Dan Beckman, thank you so very much for joining us on this installment of the M2M podcast. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening